Hello, and welcome to show 37 of the Retro Computing Roundtable, recorded Sunday, October 28th, 2012. RCR audio files are hosted by Cyber Ears. They can host your podcast or audio files too, so go to cyberears.com for more details. I am Carrington Vanston, and I am King of Canada, as far as any of you know. Today, I am joined by David Grealish and Earl Evans, two puppets that I carved from magical wood. Join me in welcoming them to the show and wishing them well on their quest to become real boys. David and Earl, welcome.
Thank you. Hey. See, you actually had that intro written in here, didn't you, at one time?
Yeah, I was going from memory on what I had written before you deleted it. I thought, you know what? I'm gonna snarkily just write my own.
No,
I'm trying to remember.
I didn't delete it, honestly.
Sure you didn't, David. Nice power play. Nice try. So how have you been,
Hello.
Guys? Hello.
I've been good. Kind of, you know, busy with life and some other stuff, but otherwise good.
Cool. And what about you, Earl?
Me too. Life has been awful busy. Work has been, like, terribly busy. But I've been good.
From the balloons behind you, Earl, that you're now old.
You know, the odometer kicked over.
The old-ometer?
Yeah, the old-ometer. Thank you very much. Yep, so now I'm in my 30s.
Oh, how are you? I remember my 30s.
I vaguely remember my 30s.
Yes, I
have left
them.
Hit the big 50.
So, oh, did you?
I did.
What was the exact day?
October 20.
He can't remember that far back.
Yeah. Hey, what? Birthday? No, my family did a party for me, so those viewing on the video, I got a balloon behind me here. Oh, and I got a button.
The big 50.
Yep. Button says, over the hill.
I thought that was like the 40th birthday was the whole over the hill theme.
Well,
no,
he's
I
just
was nowhere.
Up speed.
I was nowhere near the top of the hill. Yeah,
I mean, you're really over the hill. That's over the hill's 40. You're like
I'm way over the hill.
He's mid bobsled run now. It's going.
Yeah, you're accelerating down the other side of the hill.
I have no idea. The wind going through my hair, man.
It's just a big chunk of computers that you can remember. That's why we have you on the show, for that sense of history, the sense of scope and scale, thousands of years of history in your mind.
Indeed. When we carved the ones and zeros in stone, yes.
Okay.
You know,
and I think we should move on. But
yes.
In the post-game show...
Before we move on, since we're talking about age...
Before we move on,
okay?
Once again, David says, I want to be host.
No! I'm just trying to talk in the subject we were talking in.
What?
Since we're talking age, why don't we all say how old we are?
Okay.
I'm interested. You just turned 50.
I did.
Earl, I turned 48 in June. So
God, I'm actually the young one?
So you're the,
really?
I thought you were the youngest one.
Holy
you're the
crap,
kid.
I'm never the young one anywhere, like, statistically.
let me guess, I think you're like 46, right? 47?
44.
Okay, well, hey, yeah. Wow, you're really young.
I have beautiful quality. But I'm on my second 44. I scrolled her over.
You're the baby. So.
how did I ever get more hair than you?
God, I haven't had hair since high school. I started shaving this sucker a long time ago. So,
all right.
So now that David has had us have our little talk, shake your head to David. Shake your head.
I have problems. I'm the middle child.
Nice. Okay. So let's move on to our news. We've got some items of interest to go over. The first one, it looks like I'm supposed to talk about, which I will do my best to talk about. I'm a little unfamiliar on this topic, but we were speaking last show, I believe, maybe even last show and the show before, about homebrew computers. And Simon Ferber sent us off a note about his 68K homebrew computer. And we'll have links in the show notes to his website and a forum that talks about it and a YouTube channel where you can see stuff. And he was mentioned on Hackaday twice. So it's really something worth checking out. And what's cool about it is, for me anyway, the fact that it's a 68K version 1. We were talking before the show, Earl and I, about the... How cool, like the whole single board computer thing I'm really into, and I'm more interested in it than seem to be pulling the trigger on purchasing or making one, because I don't know how much use I'd have out of it, but there's just something about them that draws me, in the same way that I'm drawn to vintage computers. What was appealing about them at the time is exactly what's appealing about these single board computers. And this one stands out, again, because it's 68K based. So it's, like we said, 68K, it's been clocked to 10 megahertz, which is a lot of megahertz, I think. That's nine too many. And it's got 4 megs of RAM, and it comes with enhanced basic 68K built in, very useful. But you know what separates something like this from a traditional vintage computer was it comes with 10 base T Ethernet built in, and heck, it's got a clock, so like that kind of stuff. So it's the kind of thing that would have been a dream computer when I was tinkering with 68K stuff back in the day. Now, do either of you guys have any more direct experience with what is this called, Project Kiwi?
I don't. Yeah, I don't have any direct experience. I have taken a look at the webpage. I actually encountered it a little while ago when I was looking for something like a 68,000 based single board computer. I would like to know more about the 68,000 chip. I was interested in it back in the day, but didn't have a 68K based machine. And so I went looking around, and this webpage, of course, came up. One of the things that I thought was interesting is that the design criteria here, he was trying to keep as much of it as possible with parts that you could have obtained back in the day. So it's easy these days to cheat and make certain parts of your circuits more advanced with the chips that we have available. But if you really want to build a computer that you could have built back then, you got to make it with parts that you had back then. So I think people, if you're interested, you should take a look at his webpage and the design specifications and all that. I found it fascinating. And I think it's really cool that it got the exposure that it did on Hackaday. I didn't even know about that.
Mm-hmm. And there's a whole forum discussing it, which I think is awesome that he stuck up a forum. So if you have questions, you can go on there. He's got a PHPB forum going. So just really cool. Really cool project, I think. Definitely something I'm really happy we're kicking the news off with, because it's something. Now, Earl, you said you never had a 68K machine back in the day, not even an early Mac?
Well, I did have that, but you're so abstracted from the chip on those. Yeah, at work, I had a Mac Plus. And
which was, of course, a big complaint about Macs at the time, like that whole layer of abstraction, the whole GUI layer that everyone said, oh, the Mac is a toy, not a real computer, which I always thought was nonsense. But it's definitely the case that it does distance you more from the guts, which was sort of the point of the Mac, I guess, and the part of its appeal at the time.
Oh, yeah.
It definitely was a feature and an effect of having that GUI in the front.
That's the thing. I mean, the Mac Plus was such a wonderful machine. We used it for our departmental newsletters. We use it for all kinds of desktop publishing and just general office automation use. Fantastic for that. I loved it. It's my favorite machine at the time. But like you say, you never saw the guts of it. I tried, actually. I went out and I took a look at the books. What were they called? Were they called Inside Macintosh? Mm-hmm. You remember those programming books?
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Inside Macintosh, yeah.
Actually, yeah. Apple published those directly, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. They're like part of their program.
They're really big white ones. I had those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of reading. It was pretty deep. But even when you were looking at that, you were still looking at APIs and like that. I mean, you still weren't looking at the chip. So
And I have to admit, I only just caught on. You guys have been saying 68K, which means 68,000, but single board. I'm thinking 6800 chip.
No, he actually has 68,000 chips.
Right, in his computer. See that. And are you aware of any other single board 68,000 computers?
That's one of the reasons it really stood out for me. It's completely unique. I have never seen anybody do that.
I mean, it's like I've been listening, but
Jerry Ellsworth, eat your heart out.
I kind of took it for granted 6800 because single board computers usually 8-bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. And part of the other thing that sparked the interest, a buddy of mine back in the 80s had built an S100 system with a 68,000 chip in it, and he'd actually ported over CPM 68,000 and did a bunch of work on that. And he told me about the address space, the thing where the 68,000 has just this nice linear programming model, and it sounded fascinating. And so I decided it's time to learn a little bit more about it. But I don't know, this single board computer, this Project Kiwi, is it actually, it sounded like they were trying to set it up where it was available to purchase, but is it yet, or is it still
I don't think so. As far as I can remember, no. It's just
It looked like it's still just design phase and what Simon had actually done himself. I hope at some point it would become something like a kit that you could buy, because I think I'd be
interested. at least a spec or something to say, here, you
right.
can read what I've done. But it seems to be so well documented that that might be something possible regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was impressed is basically the summation here. Less impressive might be the return of Apple One auctions. They just keep coming back.
They won't go away.
Won't go away. David, tell us about not another Apple One auction.
So basically, there's another Apple One auction coming up, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens, since the last high-profile Apple One auction, it didn't sell. So I wrote a quick little blog post about it. There's some other news coverage, that happened, but not a lot really. But anyway, so go link in the show notes. There's also a video though that's very interesting that shows this one working. So first off, this one works, and they claim that it's only one of six that work in the world, and it comes with a time period appropriate little terminal, television set. Terminal, whatever, and a keyboard, and so it's ready to run, and it even comes with the operating instructions signed by Woz and stuff like that. So, and now one thing that's unique about it too is it's not Sotheby's or Christie's. This one is in a German auction house. I have it in here. What is it called? Anyway,
Das Auction House.
So take a look. Not a whole lot more to say. Other we can talk about. What do you think? How will it sell this time? We can check back on it. This one has a starting bid of 70,000 euros, which is about $90,000.
That on me. Buy it now. Where's the button? Click.
Brecker is the German auction house. Also, there's a link there to the other area where this is, and it's interesting that, and I mentioned this in my article. There's some interesting stuff in here. 707 items in their science and technology, fine toys, and automata section of auction. So the auction just before it is also an HP touchscreen personal computer from 1983, a 150. And then right after it, so it's lot 20. Lot 21 is a original Mitz Altair, 8800. So be kind of interesting to follow those two to see what happens. But there's lots of other interesting, like old typewriters. There's an Enigma from 1943. A ton of old technology, old phones, and what else did I see? A bunch of, I wrote this like last week, so just instruments and that sort of thing. So it's November 24th, so two more shows from now or whatever we can talk about what happened with it.
So what do you guys think? Will this one sell or not?
I think so. I think it has I still think it's kind of 50-50. I tend to think it will sell though. Maybe just at the minimum, because it works.
Right.
Where the last one didn't. What do you think, girl?
I agree. I think the fact that it works will be interesting enough where it'll sell. If I had that kind of money, I don't think it would matter to me, because for that much money, I'd never risk powering it on. But
yeah.
It's interesting that it is a working artifact.
And just the last auction that didn't sell, it did get bid up to... 51,000 US dollars, where its minimum was equivalent of $80,000. So again, this one, the minimum is $90,000. So I don't know. I tend to think somebody will come, maybe that high bidder would come up a little bit more for a working one or some of the other people.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see what comes of this one. They just keep coming up for a computer that only a very small number were made. Lately, it seems like all of them are coming up for auction.
And also that it's going to, I don't know anything about Brecker, but, I guess you tend to think that by going with Christie's or Sotheby's, that would be, you're going to get the best dollar for, best money for your item, right? So, but who knows, maybe they have a strategy going with this other auction house. Or maybe they just live in Germany.
just as likely, I think. Okay, so moving on. Earl.
Yes.
Why?
Discuss. No, Earl, colon, Earl. The story of Earl. No, Minitel, you've got some disappointing news about Minitel.
A few months ago, Minitel in France shut down. And I'd read about this, and James, one of our listeners, sent it in, said, can't believe you guys didn't talk about that. And I don't think we did mention it, did we?
Nope.
But
we didn't?
As... early as the early 80s, while the rest of us, a small handful of us, were poking around at things like CompuServe, in France, they had a nationwide information network, Minitel. And at first, you could just get the phone directory, but over time, more and more services were added, like newspapers and banking and a variety of things. And they would actually, the government subsidized the terminals and the access, so it didn't matter what your socioeconomic strata, you had online access to information services in France. And it was a very interesting point of pride for the nation. And, of course, when the Internet came along, the handwriting was on the wall, that it was just a matter of time before this proprietary service would no longer be useful, but it still had an amazing run. I think it was introduced. That sounds really good, David.
David.
Yum. Sure. What was I saying? David made me want a coffee. What an amazing run from 1982, right. General availability, all the way to 2012, June of 2012. So go France, go information systems.
What was the, not similar, but the TV-based information system in Britain?
Teletext.
Teletext, yes, because this made me think of Teletext, which
Minitel, that was a part of, didn't they turn to France and Minitel to help them get that off the ground? I believe. I could be wrong. History.
I think they did the duplexing at the channel when it met, is when they reversed.
The channel. The channel.
Britain humor. I'm a Canadian. I'm allowed to make
go Commonwealth.
Jokes. Yes. God save the Queen.
Just to add to this, too, there's a nice segment in The Machine That Changed the World, that documentary, and you can watch it on, you know, online easily on YouTube. Or,
I was going to call my autobiography that, so I can't believe
top documentaries or whatever. And there's a good little section, and that documentary is from like '92, so it was still going pretty strong at that point. And it talks about Minitel because, you know, it started off as being an enhanced phone directory essentially,
mm-hmm.
and then it built services all built on top of that, and it was even used for like political purposes, like early. What do you call it now where people do like mob, you know, instant mob things politically
mobs?
And flash mobs? People were able to, not quite the same thing, but, you know, get groups of people together much quicker than they used to be able to.
But they were called flash mobs with cheese.
Stinky cheese.
Now, what I don't remember reading on here is whether or not this had any kind of messaging component, if you could do email.
I think so, but I don't know.
Yep. I'll have to go look at the Wikipedia page. But anyway, farewell, Minitel.
I saved.
You know, and we thank you.
Yes, do we? Cool, we thank you. Okay, so next up, we've got, oh, me again. I don't know if you, did you guys hear about this? A new ZX Spectrum, you would pronounce it ZX Spectrum, and you would be wrong. A new ZX Spectrum game was released, Encyclopedia Galactica by Jonathan Caudwell. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
No.
I'm excited about it. It's awesome. And not the game itself, because I haven't played it, and I don't have a ZX Spectrum on which I could play it. But it's a brand new game that's just come out, Encyclopedia Galactica. My first thought was... Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Okay, Encyclopedia Galactica. Cool. So it seems, and having not played it, I'm going from a description here, you fly around in a little spaceship and you land in various planets. You have to go and collect specimens. And sometimes the animals can be like hostile and you have to tranquilize them before you collect them and that kind of stuff. So it's about you collecting specimens around. Neat looking little color graphic system for both the 48K and the 128K ZX Spectrum.
But it'll work on the 128.
It will. And what's awesome about it is it's a proper new release. It comes on cassette. Comes on cassette. How fantastic. With a little cassette inlay, it's only 5 pounds. So it's just crazy
that's
to not pick this up.
Heavy. That why is it weigh 5 pounds?
You're off the show. Where's my kick button? Kick, everybody's kicked. Again, I say, God save the Queen. I'm just so excited that this has come out.
Man,
Jonathan
I was just
Caudwell,
about to order that.
Awesome. Pardon?
I was just about to order that. I have a ZX Spectrum 128.
Like, how do you not order this for 5 freaking pounds?
The thing that I need, though, is a monitor that'll work with it and a power supply.
Well, those are included with the game.
Carrington.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yes, David.
As soon as they make one for the ZX80 or ZX Spectrum, and they sell it in dollars, maybe I'll buy one.
Dollars. And you'll say yeehaw and wave your flag and shoot your gun. Whatever.
Howdy, partners. Come and get it.
That's right. But instead of collecting little animals, you have to collect horses with lassos. And
rise above the cliche, guys. Anyway, I'm really excited about it. The screenshots from the game make it look like
it looks,
as
yeah.
good as any game I've played for the ZX Spectrum. I think it looks fantastic. I love the fact that it's £5. I think it's a completely reasonable price for a brand new game for a vintage machine. I love that it's not a digital download, that it comes on a cassette with a proper printed in
there
and stuff.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
I adore that this came out. I'm just thrilled about it. I think it's fantastic. So I don't have a ZX Spectrum. I'm going to purchase this anyway because I will someday have one, and I just want to support development for old machines in proper, real, physical media. So I'm really excited about it.
Can you say anything? Because I noticed that the link here goes to Retro Fusion. I only just heard about this magazine. So do you know anything about that, Carrington?
I don't know anything about
it. It looks cool. You may want to order a copy of the magazine, too.
Well, I'm not much of a magazine reader. I wish they would come out with a version of this on the iPad to give me another reason to look at newsstand. I've gone all digital for magazines now. So I want physical things for the games. I want digital for magazines.
Realize the irony there, right?
I'm a complicated man. I'm many faceted. Do I contradict myself? Okay, I contradict myself. If it's good enough
but
for
the But don't you want to receive
the
printed magazine to go with your cassette? So you just
no, just nice more stuff. There's very few printed things I do. I subscribe to Juiced GS, and I get that digitally, or I get that on paper. But honestly, I get that on paper because I can't get it any other way.
I'm with you, though. I almost never. And the funny thing, sometimes I get magazines and I never have the time to look at them, where I'll read something online.
I only subscribe to the one. Juiced GS is the single magazine I subscribe to.
That's me, too, actually. It's the only one I subscribe to.
But Retro Fusion looks cool. It's a UK-based, retro. I don't think it's all just about gaming, but this game is the big story of the current issue. It looks like. So I'm excited about it. I'm just really excited about this game, and I love that it's come out on a cassette.
I was trying to see how much it costs offhand. Did you happen to look how much it costs to ship to Canada?
Can't ship to Canada.
Yeah, too bad.
Can't be done. We're too far and too cold. Can't happen. Can't wait for the ice to melt.
Because I have to fill out all the, billing information and stuff, so.
Right. So, Earl?
Yes?
I'm swinging it back to you. I hope you're ready to talk about Industrial 8, in quotes, Industrial 8. I don't really know what that means, but you're saying it's
$4,600. $4,600.
This is something that was, I think, this is a thing that was all the rage on everyone was Twittering about it.
Yep, there were tweets.
I couldn't understand
forums.
What the heck the thing was.
Well, okay. So, Digital
Explain
Equipment Corp. made the PDP-8 computer, and a handful of them have sold recently on eBay, and they've gone for pretty high prices.
Oh, this isn't the thing I was thinking of. I know what this is.
It wasn't too long ago, says the 50-year-old guy, that you could actually find a PDP-8, that somebody would just have one that was used for some sort of purpose, and they'd give it to you.
Right, you're saying it wrong. You're 50 now, Earl. You have to go, back in my day.
That's right, that's my lawn.
So, but these days...
That is so cool, though.
If you want a PDP-8, you're going to be paying the bucks. And if you wanted what they call the straight 8, one of the original models, then you're going to be paying serious bucks. But this guy is an interesting... A lot of deck equipment was used for industrial purposes. You would find them for manufacturing control or, analog-to-digital converters in a lab or something like that. And this was a PDP-8 version that was made for industrial purposes. The thing that I liked about it was it just looks stinking cool. Don't you think that – did you guys look at that photo?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Yeah,
what is the part that's above the computer itself, though? Is that part of the tape drive or something? Or the paper tape, or what is that?
You mean those plastic dinghies? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know. I was looking at that, and I was thinking, okay, I don't think that's just decorative. I think that actually serves some sort of a purpose, like maybe the little flowery-looking things there are fan intakes or something.
Yeah, that's what I think they are, the fan intakes.
So, yeah, I'm sure that the real deck enthusiasts out there will slap me around and will tell us what they really are. But it looks cool. This is one of those rare cases where I don't really care what it does functionally. I just like the looks of the thing.
That's quite a premium, it getting almost $5,000, frankly. And, you know, talking about how many Apple Ones are left in the world or how many are working, how many of these are left
PDP-8s?
Or that work?
Well, yeah. More than Apple Ones, but...
You think so?
Yeah,
definitely.
I don't think that many more, though. I mean, you will still find PDP-8s in individual collectors' collections, that kind of thing. So.
Oh, wow. And, if you scroll down, there's lots of great other pictures.
But if you're interested in the PDP-8, you know, it also used to be that you could get... there was at least one reproduction computer from Spare Time Gizmos, I think it was, the SBC6120. Which was a PDP-8 sort of look-alike, almost like they took a PDP-8 and shrunk it. It was a very cool sort of looking thing. But you can't even get those anymore. They're not no longer produced, and when they do go up on eBay, they sell for
a couple thousand bucks, right?
Yeah, a bunch of money. So anyway, thought this was cool, thought I'd point it out.
Very cool.
So that is not the item. I'm going to send you guys a link, and then we can put it on our show notes as well. That's not the auction item. I've just sent it in the live chat part that I thought you were talking about. I thought you were going to be talking about this Mimic Systems Spartan computer that sold recently on eBay that everybody was all a buzz about on Twitter.
We need to talk about
Twitter.
That.
And because I couldn't even really tell what the heck it was. It was something about, I guess, letting Commodore 64s use Apple II hardware or something, or...
It turns a Commodore 64 essentially into an Apple II.
Because all I know is Sean Fahey, who's awesome and who you guys would have both met at the latest Kansas Fest, he tweeted, whatever the phrase is, this eBay auction proves retro Commodore users are really frustrated wannabe Apple II users.
Right.
Go, Sean. That was the best tweet ever. I noticed that I favorited that one.
It was good, and I wanted to see if I can find one of my favorite old computer magazines, and it's a Commodore 64 magazine. It's called Info, and then it became known as Info 64, and then it became known as just Info because it started supporting, of course, the 128, then later on it became an Amiga magazine. And in some of the early issues, they talk about that product, and it had big full-page ads for it and everything.
So, but what is it? I'm still...
It's an Apple II add-on for a Commodore 64. You plug it into this big box. It sort of looks like a it's sort of like this shape, sort of. And it plugs into your Commodore 64.
Because from the photos, now you have like Apple II size of an Apple II. The thing looks massive.
Yeah, I think it's essentially a clone Apple II, you know, but it's made to... add on to your Commodore 64, which is kind of silly.
Hey, David, you went invisible again.
I know. I ran off.
Oh, there you are.
But so here's like the magazine I was talking about. I'm sorry for our listeners, but check out the YouTube video.
I'm sorry for our listeners.
I feel bad for them, too.
No. Of course, the majority of our listeners are listeners versus, you know, checking us out on YouTube.
Watchers.
But you know, anytime we do something like this, you know, check it out so you can see what we're talking about. Because we don't have time to scan it all in and put it up statically. But anyway, while we're talking, I'll see if I can find an ad for it. But that's pretty neat. But I didn't know if it ever really existed, because one of the things they were talking about in here is how it was a phantom product, or what's the term for it?
Vaporware.
And like I know in one issue, he's like answering, you know, some writer's comments, like, I ordered one, I've never gotten it, and stuff like that.
Maybe this is that one.
Yeah. And I think at one point you know, that they were very ethical people, I think, to run this magazine. They wouldn't, like, take their ad money anymore because they weren't delivering product. Something like that. I could be wrong, but...
Well, so, yeah, I mean, you got it right. It's an Apple II clone that would interface with all the hookups of a Commodore 64 and let the Commodore 64 have a split personality. It gave the Commodore a multiple personality disorder. One of the people on the... I think it was the... Was it the Vintage Forums or the Commodore Forums said, I don't know why you'd want to downgrade your Commodore 64 to an Apple II. But.
And I don't know how much it costs, but it's one of those sort of situations, too, where if you really wanted to run Apple II stuff, it almost seems like you'd be better off.
Wasn't me who said that.
He pronounced
you'd be better off either
wrong.
Just buying an Apple II standalone on this, you know, have two computers, or you know,
and
or
throwing
or
out your 64.
Clone.
Totally, I totally agree with you. That's what you're going to say, right?
I think it was a price thing. Wasn't it cheaper than buying an Apple II? Because those things were like, what, $20,000 or something?
They were roughly. Whereas I believe that Commodore 64 came, you could purchase that for whatever amount of change you had in your pocket. The price it would stay on the box.
I want to.
Whatever you
I
have.
Say that
it was like a tip jar. I would say, you know, really.
Snickers.
We feel like we're overcharging you for at any amount.
I think they gave them away.
She should have. That's what I'm saying here.
I think the Mimic was like, you know, it was in the same price range as a cheaper Apple II clone, maybe, at the time.
Was it effective? Like, did it run? Like, a lot of clones, that was the problem, is they wouldn't be 100% compatible. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
I never even heard of this thing. I was looking. Everyone was all excited about it. Everyone talking about this thing. I'm like, I don't know what it is.
I wonder if we know or are familiar with who bought it.
It was,
if you're
it
the
was,
one who bought it, yeah, if you're the one who bought it, email
Wait,
us.
Wait, let me show it to you. since we're talking about it, it sold for
like $1,500 or something? Yeah, quite a bit.
A ton of money.
$1,500. Yeah, it sold for some good money.
Well, I guess it's one of those truly rare items, though.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of one, never seen one before, so...
It's one of those, like, awesome items.
Awesome.
It's pretty cool. Hey, David, I'm curious. Do we have any comments?
We do have one comment I want to bring up. Eric
I'm busy.
Earl, he can see that you're playing... Earl, he says you're playing Jumpman while you're podcasting. You can see it in the reflection of your glasses. Is that true?
Oh, man.
Really? Is he playing?
See, I'm caught. No, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe.
I'm going to follow up. Don't let me forget, really, I think I want to follow up on the Mimic thing. And you know what? I know if you do a search, you can find what the ad I'm looking for. I know it exists on the internet already. So
don't duck your responsibilities, David. You're supposed to be following the chat room. And
yeah, I'm sorry. But just last thing about the Mimic, one thing that may not exist.
Still ducking it.
Yeah, because I'll see if I can find where the guys that made the Info 64 talk about it and stuff, though, because that was it's kind of interesting.
Do you have, like, a whole run of that magazine then, David? Is that the deal?
Yeah, I have all the Info 64s up until about 4 or 5 of the Infos, the physical ones. And then and then they go very strong Amiga, which, you know, I was never much into Amiga, Commodore 64 guy. But then I have every Info in PDF.
Cool.
So
very cool.
Yeah, so if you need a copy or something.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's great. It really inspired me. It was one of the early magazines that inspired me, like when I made Historically Brewed, because they did it entirely on Commodore 64s, and they're actually very proud of it. So obviously they printed the final magazines, but they did everything on a Commodore 64.
I can see why you'd be proud of that. It's one of those things, like when you're overcoming adversity that way.
But see this page right here?
That sense of pride.
I won the Olympics.
This page showed the products that they used. This is issue 5, you know, to make this issue. So
that's actually kind of cool.
It's kind of neat, yeah.
Being a colophon or whatever they call it, where you list your products. That's neat.
I agree. Let's move on,
by the way, but I didn't win the Olympics.
Okay, folks, we're moving on to more news. Oh, it's me. We're moving on to more of me. So our last bit of news we're going to talk about is Flossie, the 5-ton movie star. It's actually a 5-ton movie star computer.
And I don't remember what it is, but it sounds familiar.
It made the news recently in the UK in particular and in the Kent local news because Flossie, do you guys know who Flossie, what or who Flossie was?
No, but I'm reading it now, so I do now.
Right. So Flossie was an ICT-1301 computer and is most famous for having been, you know, the big wall-sized 5-ton computer in a few movies and TV shows. So it was in Man with the Golden Gun, I think it was, one of the Bond films, but also featured a couple times in Doctor Who and in Blake 7. So one of the most famous science fiction actors, I guess.
Wow.
And has been over many years, over like an 8-year period or so, has now been restored to fully working condition in a barn.
That's great.
So a fellow named two engineers named Roger Holmes and Rod Brown have restored it. And so it's both good and bad. The good news is this amazing looking chunk of vintage big iron with switches and lots of blinking lights and stuff, really fascinating looking piece of hardware, is now running again. And it's an important one of these because there's so few in the first place that were ever made. And was something that featured in movies and in TV and that kind of stuff. Oh, wait, I'm hearing myself twice.
You sound okay to us.
Yeah, no, it's just, I had the YouTube every once in a while will say, I'm going to play the audio. And but the downside of this story, which wasn't picked up by the BBC News, but was picked up by like, the Kent News and that kind of stuff, is the barn that it's in, the property that barn's on, is now for sale. And it's likely that the new owners who are just buying the land are not going to want a 5-ton computer from the 1950s.
That's so, a massive installation, too, I'm looking at.
Exactly. So they're looking to basically get someone to take it. Like, can someone please just take this thing? But that it involves relocating 5 tons, literally 5 tons of computer equipment, from a barn in Kent to wherever. So they're hoping a museum or something will take this. And a little bit of interest was expressed by the Computer Conservation Society, but they said there's a, you know, logistically, it's the difficulty of making the space and the money to get it moved. So it's awesome that it's up and working again, but it's now totally in danger of being, say, scrapped. It's been sold a number of times to a number of buyers over the years, every time really purchased for its scrap value, but it happened to just never get dismantled, and so it's ducked the bullet over and over again. But this time it looks like unless someone wants to keep this thing alive, it might have been gotten working condition right before it gets junked, so it's disappointing. David, will you take it?
The computer?
Yeah.
If you'll pay for it.
You're a computer historian.
Ship it over.
Out.
Yeah, but I'll need also a building in the back to house it.
It is a building. Hollow it.
That would be. See, that would make sense if you just pay to move the entire building to my backyard.
It might float.
You could. That'd be cool. Push it. So, oh, wait, you need to buy this house first, too, because I don't own it. So.
Right.
Well, that's so buy the house, have the building shipped over, you know, wire it, and then I will be its keeper.
I will have it done by the time we finish our auction item discussions. There, I've just booked. I just paid for it on eBay.
I just read an article too recently about some other computer, and I wish I could remember the details. But there's like some other computer, a type of computer, not necessarily the same one. Actually, maybe it is the same one. Now I think about it, but it's been used in like tons of movies. Did you guys?
It's probably
know?
This. This was in a lot of movies.
No, it was a. I think it was a an American one. So. But
that was this with plastic surgery. Well, then that's not much of a story, is it, David?
No, because I can't remember the details. I can figure it out, but it'd probably take me a couple of minutes, and we're like, you're way moved on.
I didn't see this. They didn't tell me about it. Is this new?
This is OS2 Warp.
This isn't what you're used to using.
Word processor.
Spreadsheet.
Communications program.
Personal information manager.
Database.
Everything you need packaged in.
Cool.
All of those are running right now at the same time.
Multitasking.
So many things.
Record and playback video.
Yeah, I think it obliterates the software I use right now.
Yeah.
OS2 Warp, a totally cool way to run your computer.
There's a sensational range of gifts at Currys now. A massive choice at unbeatable prices.
Personal stereo at Currys starts at an incredible $9.99.
A Philips main shaver at a gift of a price, just $19.99.
An exclusive Braun food processor deal with citrus juicer and free blender.
And the new Sinclair Spectrum Plus 2 with free joystick and software. Currys, no one beats our prices, guaranteed.
Okay, well, let's move on. Let's move on to gift ideas. And since I get to sit in the host chair, I get to come up with the host's gift for this episode. And I have decided to give the gift or to suggest the giving of a gift of a good old game. And this is also standing in as a quick announcement of what I found to be quite exciting news. GOG.com, Good Old Games, site we've talked about before that I like very much, has recently announced that they're hosting Mac games now. So Mac users who are pining for vintage Macintosh games can now pick them up quite cheap over at Good Old Games. And they seem to have done the same thing that Steam did, whereas if you already owned a title for Windows and it's now available for Mac, you just automatically own the Mac version. I didn't see that as part of the announcement, but it must be the case because I own a number of games I've purchased through GOG that are now available on Mac, like Fallout, for instance, and it just tells me I own the Mac version of Fallout now, like they just count it as a title. So you may already own a bunch of Mac games if you're already a GOG member, So what I'm going to suggest, in celebration of the fact that all these great old Mac games, like Interplay games and that kind of stuff, and more to come, are now available on GOG.com, is that to give the gift of one of those, that a lot of times nowadays, if you've got a retro gaming lover and or a fan of computers, that sort of stuff, we don't buy software on disk and stuff anymore. A lot of it's digital downloads, so you can't necessarily just go and buy them a coupon. But Good Old Games does let you gift a game, so you can easily go online there and send, basically purchase on behalf of somebody else, any particular game. I don't think they've got general gift certificates, but you can pick a favorite childhood game for somebody and then just, you know, for anywhere from $3 to $5, gift them that game, which would get them an account on Good Old Games and start them off with one title. So that's what I'm going to suggest, is that you, if you've got a vintage Mac game lover in your life, that you gift them something like Fallout or one of the good Interplay games that's like Descent, those series and stuff have now all become available for Mac on Good Old Games. So that's my suggestion. Feel free to give those games to me. So, now what about eBay auctions? Let's look at what we suggested last time and whose stuff sold. It looks like I'm supposed to come up first. So last time I suggested the Keytronic dual keyboard. So it was a keyboard that had both the original RJ11 ports and also ADB, so it can run off both of those. It was a buy it now auction. I see it's got one watcher, though it's not me. It still hasn't sold. It's still sitting on eBay waiting for somebody to cough up $150. I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, but we will see. I found an interesting item, but I think overpriced at $150. So. And Earl, what about you? What had you suggested last time, and did it sell better than my keyboard choice?
I believe that my suggestion had been the Coleco Atom system, wasn't it? Getting to
it
that.
It was indeed. The Coleco Atom, and you also chose the Mac Mini in the Disk 2 enclosure.
Yes, both of them sold. Yep, don't do that very often, but in this case it was worth it. The Coleco sold for $127, which was actually a pretty good price for that complete system. I think that was kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And the Mac Mini in the Apple Disk 2 enclosure sold for a cool $1,000.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's I'm surprised. Wow, is it really? I mean, I don't know.
Isn't it amazing?
I mean, just to look at it, or you know, hey, watch it eject the CD.
Look, you can run it over and over.
I find it a bit crazy. Yeah, like just.
And what happens if you walk up and you put like a 5 1/4 floppy disk in this thing? Does it like boot ProDOS? That would be really cool.
No, it does not.
Wait, Earl, fun happens. That's what.
Chews up your disk is what it does.
Oh, man. For $1,000, I want it to boot ProDOS.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
so,
and David, what did you pick last week?
I picked the vintage 79 Mattel Electronics Thoroughbred Horse Race Analyzer handheld computer.
Awesome.
And it sold for its buy it now of I picked what was the best deal out of a few of those online. So it sold for $39.99, and yeah, so good. Maybe one of our listeners bought it.
And like Biff in Back to the Future, somebody is now using this to make their illicit millions.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I think, you know, this is a good example of, I mean, it's something that's sort of, I mean, arguably how collectible it is, or certainly not rare, but. But sort of like that Atom computer, it's something that you can kind of get into reasonably cheap, and you know, in my opinion, and have fun without spending hundreds and thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the Apple ones and the Altairs and so on.
I see that somebody. I was distracted there for a second. I see that somebody in an email, Mr. Tricky Buzz, said that Syndicate is on GOG.com now, and it is. I did not know that. I will be purchasing that. Thank you, Mr. Tricky Buzz.
Oh, look, he also said they had one of those My Auction item on Pawn Stars. And you're absolutely right. That's where I got the idea to pick it.
Oh, well, nice. But thank you for the Syndicate tip there, Mr. Tricky Buzz. I have just clicked add that to my cart. So we'll get to that after the show. Very exciting. Great game.
Who was that by, Carrington? I know it's totally familiar, but Syndicate, who was... Did you do a show on Syndicate?
No.
I guess not. No. I mean, you'd be buying it if you did a show on it, probably.
Right, yes.
I'll look it up.
Okay, you look it up. You're on your own, David. Can't even look at the comments. Oh, no, you're not on your own. Come back to us, David. You're the next auction item.
Oh, okay.
So next up, David, you are going to go a totally different way than ever before, and you this week have promised us you're going to discuss something that has nothing to do with Apple or Steve Jobs. Go.
Yeah, right. Last minute, I forgot I had not chosen an eBay auction yet. So, but, you know, one of the first things that popped in my head was next. I don't know if I've done a next item in a while. So I thought I'd try to think of some other things. Couldn't come up with it. So I went ahead and did a search for Next, and I found, I think, a pretty nice auction, though, for a whole Next system. So this is the original. Or actually, you know what? I take it back. It says Next Cube N1000, which I believe is the original Next Cube, but it's saying it's got a 68,040 in it, which I actually had a Next Cube at one time, and it also had a 68,040. So I imagine at some point you could, you know, the logic board slid into it. I guess you could have upgraded that. So in any case, it's a whole system. It's a Next Cube, keyboard, a mouse, the megapixel display, and the laser printer with cables.
Printer, the N2000? Which printer is it?
N2000,
yeah,
yep.
Cool. Nice.
And so currently it's at $500. It's got one bid, so I guess maybe that was the opening bid. It's in San Jose, California, so it's $100 shipping to the East Coast to me.
That computer's never left California. It's time for that computer to see the world.
There's a number of good pictures. It doesn't fully function from what the guy describes. It it gives an error of waiting for drive to come ready.
No.
But it's a system test pass, so it could be that it just needs an OS, or it could just need another hard drive. Fairly easily fixed, I think.
Right. As long as the hardware test is passing, you've got good hardware. So that's what really matters.
Did they use SCSI drives in those?
I'm pretty certain, yeah. This is from, 1989, right, I think?
Should be fairly easy to find a replacement drive.
Yeah, system's dated May 1989. Yeah, I'm pretty certain it. And you could use any Mac SCSI drive, you know, and format it with the Next OS.
Hmm.
So, anyway.
Or you could take this and put an Apple Disk II inside it, and then have the Mac Mini inside that. You do like a turducken thing with various computers. Who knows what OS is down on the bottom of this.
But the question is, what are you then going to put this inside of?
Awesome.
And let's see, does anybody remember what is it made out of?
What is what made out of?
The cube.
It's made out of...
No, let's see if the guy's...
It's made out of fun.
Well, as Steve Jobs, you know, made things out of, you know, titanium and then aluminum and stuff, the Next Cube was made out of magnesium alloy, I think.
I think it was made out of porridge. I'm pretty sure this is pressed porridge. You can't get these wet.
Good, yeah. It's amazing how hard it is once it dries.
Absolutely. Earl, what about you? What have you got for our listeners to spend their hard-earned money on this week?
Yeah.
Lots.
What?
And lots of punch cards.
Okay. I guess we're going to do some wallpapering. How much is lots?
2,000.
That's a lot. 2,000 punch cards?
A new old stock box of 2,000 computer punch cards. Now, here's the thing. Every now and then you'll see 10 punch cards or 20 punch cards or, you know, a lot of 30 or 50 or something like that going on eBay for various prices. Sometimes they're already punched out. Sometimes they're brand new and unused. I've never seen a box of 2,000 before. And I'm thinking, okay, $100 plus $30 shipping, that's a little rich. Maybe I wouldn't spend that. But on the other hand, boy, with 2,000 of them, I tend to use punch cards as bookmarks. So when I'm reading a book, I'll use...
And so in case you have 2,000 books on the go one time? Yeah,
exactly. Then I could use them. But, I mean, imagine what you could do with 2,000. You could give them out as retro gifts or something like that.
You could print on them. You could print something.
You could use them for some sort of promotional thing or, you know, who knows. So I just thought, the other thing is this auction has a make offer. So if you didn't want to pay the $100 and maybe they won't get the $100, that you could make an offer on it and see whether or not they take it. So I just love punch cards, and these are unused, and they look like they're very nice looking. They're not all munched or anything like that. If you look at the pictures here, you can see they're in good shape.
So, and if you didn't notice, there's actually 5 boxes available.
Yep. So if you need some punch cards, I know where you can find 10,000 of them. That's at least two COBOL programs.
I like it. I like it.
That's not a very big
COBOL stack. A little COBOL verbosity joke there.
I mean, 2,000. So 2,000 punch cards is only this big of a stack?
What's
I mean, that's a pretty big looking box.
No, you're looking at.
Well,
that.
I mean,
you wouldn't want to drop that on your toe.
That's the height of them. That's like that.
Well,
long.
No, they're about this big, right?
Right.
And so, looking from the picture, that means they're about that tall. Is 2,000?
What are you talking about?
That picture of the box there is that
right.
One
is
box?
It, is 2000? All them upright? And they're
2,000 of them.
It looks like it's I don't know how long a foot is, you non-metric people. It's foot and a half long.
Right. So just like I'm doing on my fingers here, I'm saying that that's about how tall the box is. That's what a stack of 2,000 punch cards is like.
No, that's
not the height. Punch cards are like,
the height of
Carrington,
the box.
How many millimeters tall is a punch card? Come on, Mr.
9 million. The height of the box is the height of the punch card, one punch card. So that's the height. David, I'll show you the camera. That's the height of the box. That's the height of one punch card lying like this. And then they're all in front of each other going back.
Right.
It's a lie. It's 2,000.
I see confusion in your eyes there, Dave.
2,000.
Someone actually, somebody's going to buy this box for David and teach him numbers.
I need them.
You do. I mean, what are you going to use for your key punch?
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, guys.
And for Irma. For Irma out in the garage.
And for Irma. And for Flossie, when you purchase Flossie. Okay, so moving on. What I've got for you to purchase, if anybody's got a spare roughly $10,000 lying around, I'm going rare and I'm going expensive this time, a Systron Donner 3500 has come up on eBay. Not in fantastic shape, a little rusted looking, but something you're not going to come across very often. This is another one of those particularly rare. It's an analog computer. Do you guys know about this model?
No.
Okay, so it was a portable for its time. It weighs about 30 pounds or so. I think it's 28 pounds and came with two leather straps. And it's an engineering computer. It could be used to generate test tones. And basically, it's like a field computer you would use to test things. It has a 300 and 150 volt power supplies in them. And so when you turn it on, you have to wait like 10 minutes for it to power up. And like, so talk about a lot. And this is a computer from the late 1950s.
So basically like Windows 98.
Basically, yes, except this thing just like went as it builds the power. And really awesome, like an example of an old analog computer. They're made in the late 50s. There were only about 600, some 500 or 600 of these things made, so very, very rare. And I've never seen one in person. I know I have a couple of collections that have one, but I certainly have never expected to stumble across one on eBay. So really, really rare and interesting item. Very much a specific person would be looking for this. This is not your typical vintage computer you're going to run code on. So, but if somebody is in the market for analog computers or interested in that sort of thing, I figured I'd help them know that one of the rare times where something like this on eBay has popped up. They are asking $10,000 for it, which is reflecting how rare the item is. I mean, think about it. They made as few of these as they made Apple Ones, but this is something that just didn't become as famous. But this is as rare as an Apple One, but less useful, I think, and less important in a sense, but also came a lot earlier. So this is.
You said you'd seen one?
No, I've never seen one in person, but I know of two collections in the States that have them. This, I think, says, according to the listing here, that this is the only one he knows of that was in Canada. So it's offering, I think, free shipping with your $10,000 purchase. So that's nice of him to throw that in.
Well, I mean, if it was $10,000, I was going to buy it, but that's $10,000 Canadian dollars.
Yes.
If you only hear it's $10,023.
Well, technically,
dollars,
it's only $9,999 Canadian. And
that's
eBay
just an outrage.
Is saying that your dollar that requires slightly more because our dollar is mighty, the mighty loony.
Oh man!
So 1950s analog computer, only 600 of them made. You can pick it up for the pocket, the easy pocket change of $10,000. No, I don't think there's a limit on this one. This is one of the long-term buy it now auctions, and I see it has a few watchers already. So we'll see what comes of it. I'm interested to see if this sells. I hope it finds a good home.
Now, I don't think it's going to sell.
The person who's selling it said that it needs to be tubed up and that they haven't actually tested it, that in fact the power cord's been cut off.
They cut it when they put it. What? Okay, that's something I've never understood. Why do people cut the power cords and stuff?
I just don't get that.
Because
but
so many
you
people
see
do
that happen so often.
All the time. There's got to be a reason for doing it. Because all the time I will come across old equipment where the power cord has been snipped. And I don't understand. I can see capping it or labeling it, please don't plug me in or something, but actually physically cutting it. There's got to be a reason that other people know about.
I'm thinking it's either some type of government facility or some facilities saying we're done with this now, so it's no good. And they,
but this
you know,
person said
excess.
They did it themselves before they stuck
they
it in the closet. Yeah. Yeah, they chopped the power cord.
They were just angry.
Oh, I didn't read that.
Yeah,
that's
I hate
dumb.
This computer.
Now I want $10,000. I don't know, man.
It'd be interesting. Whoever, I wonder if any of these in the world work. Like we were talking about the Apple ones that are so rare that the ones that are actually functional. I wonder if there's any functional specimens of this particular computer that work.
I don't know.
I'm just throwing that out there.
I don't know.
We had a someone bring in their functioning, a much later version of one, I think actually from the late 70s or early 80s, an analog computer at the Atlanta Historical Computing Society, you know, our club, and gave a demonstration. It was really great. It was pretty interesting. He had run some programs and such. Or
how do you compute with it? How do you compute with an analog computer? Awesomely?
Yeah, it's utilizing electrical, I don't know how to describe
vacuums,
it.
Vacuums, baby.
Well, it's using electric, like voltage regulations to do the on and off, I guess. I don't
sure,
know.
Well, that
was kind of the crude analogy, but is it kind of like the slide rule?
That wasn't crude.
Yeah.
Throw an F-bomb
computers.
In there if you want a crude analogy.
Well, this is what I do remember exactly. So he gave a demonstration. He hooked up an oscilloscope to it, mm-hmm. and he ran a program that simulated a ball bouncing. So dropping a ball from a certain height, and then how it would, you know, bounce, down.
Oh, like a physics simulation.
Yeah, yeah. So he's able to use it that way. And it was cool to see it on the scope. I mean, it literally, you know, sort of went like that. So.
Nice.
Cool. So, guys.
Cool, man.
That's it for our news, and that's it for our auction purchases. But what else do we have to talk about? We're going to have some software to give away. I know when I talk myself, I'll give away that.
Oh, yeah.
Our game, our contest. But, David, what about you? I think you've got some sort of petition going again. David's throwing up crap.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention my online petition to force Apple to build a visitor center at their new
You're
campus.
Still on that?
Yeah. I figured, what the heck, man?
They're not going to let you in the Cupertino city limits pretty soon, man.
You let it go, man.
It's like I swore it wasn't going to be my life's goal or anything, but, you know, I figured one more shot. Why not? See, you know,
I have signed your petition.
What if they finally do it? Wouldn't that be a big win, right?
And they're going to call it the David Grealish Get Off My Butt Center. Yeah.
All right already. We'll open it.
It's just called All Right Already.
Yeah. So if you get a chance, you know, go to the show notes, take a look. I basically introduced this real quick in my blog. And then you know, it links over to the petition. Not a huge lot of signatures yet. There's 28. Yeah, let's see how it does. But maybe Apple might change their mind one day. But I wrote a couple of articles back in the spring about Apple. You know, people are going to be very interested in this. Actually, let me just read a couple real quick. I'm not going to read the whole thing. So basically, I brought it all down to some key points. So here's the first one. First, it's not a museum. It's a visitor center with a gallery of Apple's story. And then the second point, the new campus will be an attraction unto itself. Fight the idea or embrace it. Steve Jobs recognized this and stated at the Cupertino City Council, thank you, I think we do have a shot at building the best office building in the world, and I really do think architecture students will come here to see this. I think it could be that good. And then I'll just read the third point and leave it at that. Go check it out. Apple should see it as a strategic and important part of both their public relations and advertising mission. Many Apple customers or potential customers are not necessarily enthusiasts, but a visit here will change that. So I'm just saying that this new campus they're building is kind of going to be an attraction on its own. People are going to want to go there. And I don't know if anyone's going to be all ticked off that they can't, but I think they may have at least a small problem with people trying to go there anyway. People go to the current one, and there's not that much to do or see. So why not embrace the idea, build something to – I see your face, Carrington. And one of the other points I make, though, and I'll get off of it, is just that I think they could make it a great marketing tool. For instance, they have their big store in New York is what do you call that? Like the.
I'm trying to mess you up, man.
You did. You did. They make a flagship store. I think they could create the flagship store here at their corporate headquarters, and they could sell some things that they don't sell at the other stores. And then,
flags and ships.
Yeah. Cannons.
With Apple logos. Oh, Apple.
So anyway, check it out. See what you think.
So and, if enough of us sign your petition.
They'll do it.
Will it's you guaranteed. Shut up about it?
I'll shut up about it. Yeah. I'm going to give it about a year. So that's basically my goal. My goal is 10,000 signatures.
How many are you at so far?
28.
So basically, you're saying this is a ground floor opportunity.
Right. To get in on the ground floor.
Awesome. I signed your petition. So
you got it on the ground floor.
I do think it would be a good thing to have. I'm messing with you, but I do think it would be a good move by Apple. I think everyone would like it, and I think they would get benefit out of it. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Agree, too, honestly. I don't know what their hesitation is to do.
They don't look back, Earl. They never look back.
Well,
looking back.
Not like they're lacking cash.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about it. So check it out, read it, see what you think, sign it, tweet it.
Tweet it. And what about you, Earl? What is going on lately with you?
Well, Carrington, this is your fault.
Woohoo!
As most things
yeah?
are. But you're forcing me to spend money. So I talked to my daughter, and I told her the idea of building a MAME cabinet and showed her the different parts and everything that go into it, and she is just off the chart wild.
And I showed you how, like, it's crazy easy to do something like that nowadays.
It is so easy. Yep. So I said, okay, step one, we ought to download MAME and download a couple of the ROMs that they have there on the MAME site, some things that have gone into the public domain, and just play around with them. Just show her what MAME is, what it does. And then I told her the notion that this controller board takes things like buttons and joysticks and stuff like that and simulates key presses. So it's just like turning buttons and joysticks into keys on your keyboard.
Exactly.
It's so easy to do.
And it's a nice, what I like about building MAME stuff, the two that I've done so far, is it's essentially with the little slip-on plugs now, it's like a no-solder thing. It's like you could just literally clip together a MAME unit nowadays.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, educational. I was telling her, I said, this is like automotive switches where instead of soldering on the connection, you've got these little clamps where you... not really a clamp, more like I don't even know what you call it, but the little slide-on tabs that right. you connect up to the switches.
Yeah, the unit that I had used to have behind me in the last show, my little current MAME cabinet, which is now over there where I do the no quarter recording, that was done with those, and so literally everything just slid together, and I was wiring it up to an Xbox controller, which was a little more difficult having to rip that apart and plug into it because it runs on an Xbox. But it's crazy easy to assemble something like that nowadays. I think a lot of people are under a misconception that there's more to it to make a standalone MAME machine, but the technology has gotten to the point where it's now a do-it-yourself over a weekend really easy project. It's the difficult part is getting the cabinet. It's getting the thing to put it in.
The cabinet itself is going to be probably the most the whole thing will be hands-on, but that'll be the most construction-oriented part of what.
But
we
can do it over time. Like it's just as long as you start.
Yeah,
with,
no,
like,
I see.
You drill holes in to make the controller board.
Exactly.
Everything else will come with time.
See, my daughter is more the type of, let's go straight to Mars. You know, let's not stop at the moon. Let's not stop in orbit. You know, let's not fly a plane. Let's just go straight to Mars. Whereas I'm kind of I'm going to take one step, and then maybe I'll take another step. So we have totally different design philosophies about how to do stuff. But I think we'll meet in the middle somewhere. But I told her, yeah, baby steps. I've got an old Philips VGA monitor that was toward the end of CRTs. So like as CRTs were starting to, you know, when the LCD panels were out, but they were expensive still. So this is a new, it's a nice VGA 4x3 monitor. So that'll be a perfect monitor for this. Like I think it's a 17-inch
And that's the only thing I recommend, that people that have looked at this, I've had a few people, especially now that I'm doing the no quarter thing, and we run that, both Mike and I do it on MAME, I've had people write in asking me some of the details on the MAME construction that I've done on the two units that I've made, and talking about monitors and things. So one of the few things that I'll strongly recommend is that you do go with a CRT monitor. The games themselves were designed to do that, and it really does make a difference to the bleed and stuff, the fuzziness of a CRT is sort of integral to the effect of the game. And so I find when you run these things on an LCD, it really doesn't have the same feeling, and it can make the graphics look a little weird. You're much better off getting a CRT monitor. If it's not an old, like 15 hertz one or whatever, kilohertz, not a big deal. But going with a CRT of some sort really does end up with a much more aesthetically pleasing result.
So that's what we're going to do. And we're going to go with that IPAC 2 controller that you recommended.
Totally way to go. Like, yeah, that is such a brilliant piece of hardware, so easy to work with, and it's so readily available. Yeah, totally. The only thing nowadays people choose between is, do you want an IPAC 2, or are you doing a gauntlet system and you need an IPAC 4? But really, other than that, there's no reason to look at any other type of controller. Come on. Yeah.
Yep. So we'll take photos, maybe some video, as we go along on the construction. We'll share them up on the channel. So that's one of the things that we're going to get started on here pretty soon.
That is awesome. But the reality is, you can build one of these things, other than looking at what you're going to do for a cabinet, the actual build can be done really cheap. Like, there's no reason to be spending a bunch of money on making a main machine.
No, it's $39 for the IPAC 2. And if you want to get the IPAC 2... what's the name of the economy model? They have one that's just USB, and there's one other limitation that really didn't have any impact on us. And they sold this for $35 and with free shipping. So
oh, nice.
$35 gets you the controller board with a USB connection to the computer. And
like, I've got the other one that comes with both USB and, like, it's really a PS2 connector and a little adapter, but I use it with USB, and I have no need for it to be a PS2 connector at all. So,
right. Neither do I. And I've already got an old computer that, you know, we can use for this. So.
Well, the main thing is, in case people watching might be, this might be something that occurs to people, USB has a limitation on how many simultaneous key presses you can have. And so that's always been the thing that's held back MAME use for USB, because people didn't want to say, well, if I'm pressing the joystick up and left, that counts as two button presses, and I'm hitting like simultaneously two other buttons, that's more than USB can take. But the IPAC 2 does something where it does permit multiple key presses, like more than you're ever going to use on an arcade machine, simultaneously over USB. I don't know what they did, but they got rid of that limitation. So,
wow, yeah. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, because that had been something I had been worried about. And that's the reason when I got mine, I got the PS2 one, because I had read that you want to go that way just in case you're doing some complicated thing, because a lot of people won't realize that the way the joystick works is just multiple switches. So if you've got a four-way joystick, you're pressing one or two of those switches at a time. And so you have to count your joystick as two simultaneous presses in addition to your button presses. And that means you're often going to have at least three presses. You're going up and left, and you're hitting a fire button.
It's like you're leaning on the keyboard.
Exactly. So it's important that works. But it does. I do know it works perfectly fine, and I've used the IPAC 2 over USB for MAME on a Mac, which is a really great way to go because Mac MAME is not great, but it worked perfectly for the multiple key presses, and on the PC, my first MAME build, and it worked perfectly on that as well for the multiple presses, and I've never had any issue. So it's a great piece of kit. For $35, it's a steal.
Yeah, very nice. And the other thing I'd say is that if you go on eBay, you can find these kits with, like, you get 12 buttons, you know, 8 player buttons and 4 nice. Player 1, player 2, player 3, 2 joysticks, and all of the mounting hardware, all of the switches, everything like that for cheap.
Nice.
I mean, it's $32, I think, or something like
that. That's how I got mine. I got mine basically as a bag of buttons, I've reused those buttons. And so you got to remember, the button will come with a little housing and a little switch on the bottom, so you want to make sure you get the whole little chunk.
Yep.
But they're cheap. Like, they're really cheap. And so I got mine as a bag of buttons. In fact, when I got it, it was something like 50 assorted buttons. I didn't even get to pick my colors. It was whatever. I'm like, whatever. There'll be something in there I want to use.
Nice. So that's one of the things that's up with me.
That's exciting. That's exciting, Earl. And for me, what I've got is I've got software to give away. We talked about it last week. This Star Raiders. The box is not within grabbing distance, but
Star Raiders.
I held it up last week. Star Raiders for the Atari 400 and 800. We had 44 entries into our contest. I have them here in little saved PDFs, so I've got everyone's email address. We will only use, once we pick the winner, just to let everyone know, I will delete everybody's info. We won't use it for something else. So I think the way to do it to make it fair, because if you do something like, it's 44, so if you do something like pick a number between 1 and 44, I think it doesn't make it truly random. So David, why don't you give me any random number higher than 10,000, and I'll just mod it.
12,850.
12,850. Modding 44 gives me number 2. Okay, so number 2. Da, da, da. So our winner is... Oh, our winner is a friend of the show who's probably, although David's the one doing it, in the chat room at the moment.
Yeah.
Da, da, it is Eric Nielsen.
Cool.
Yay! Eric,
are you in our chat
Congratulations.
Room?
Congratulations!
He is in the chat room, or he was.
Well, fantastic. That is awesome. So good friend of the show there.
RCR and, applause.
Yeah. Nice. Nicely chosen. So well done, Eric.
Psych. Oh, wait. No, you really
So, can't. Eric, I will email you, Eric, and get your address, and I will get that sent off to you this week. Well, that's exciting. And thank you to everybody else who entered. It was really nice to get a number of you wrote in suggestions for things that we might be able to do to improve the show. And every time there was one with a suggestion, I would send the suggestion part that got sent to me to both David and Earl so we could check it out. And so there were some good ones there, some, I think, things that we're going to take under advisement. So.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And we do
we're going to have a meeting, and we're going to tell Carrington some things.
Yeah, it's long overdue.
Awesome. So yeah, so that was fantastic. Very, very nice to be able to give something away. So I think, as far as I can tell, that wraps up our show. So thank you very much to everybody for listening. Our next show, I see from the notes here, will be November 11th. So join us on Sunday, November 11th, 2012 at 1 p.m. Pacific or 4 p.m. Eastern. So if you want to join in live the way Eric did, and Eric won software, though you won for joining in live, you know. And please help us by spreading the word in forums and tweeting and that kind of stuff. And you can review us on iTunes, which helps our position a lot. So if you want to give us a 5-star, give us, you know, however many stars you think David and the rest of us deserve, you can give
do
us.
It. Those.
No, don't say that.
Do it. We can take it. I can take it. And you can, of course, check out all the show links. The show links are the links for everything we talked about in this episode. You will be able to find on our website, which is rcrpodcast.com. You can send us feedback to feedback@rcrpodcast.com, and we really, in particular, love to get audio files. So if you want to record something, a little MP3 file, something like that, and send it off to us, that's always fun to be able to play on the show. And you can follow us on Twitter @rcrpodcast. So until next time, Metro.